Hey everybody, Norm here. Today's sponsor of Still Entitled is Casper Mattresses, obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/untitled and using the offer code Untitled, just like the name of this podcast. Listen, you spent about a third of your life sleeping. Let's make sure you do it on a good mattress. Casper brings two comfy technologies together for better nights and brighter days. Latex foam and memory foam. So they got the right amount of sink and the right bounce, no matter how you sleep. And they have a risk-free trial and return policy. To deliver it straight to you, you can try it for 100 days. And if you're not happy, they'll pick it back up. At the store, you maybe get a minute with those mattresses, but with Casper, you'll actually be able to sleep on it. It's $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size mattress. Comparing that to industry averages, it's an outstanding price point. So get $50 toward any mattress purchase today by going to casper.com/untitled and using the offer code Untitled. But now, on with the show.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
And it has been a long time since we've done this.
Well, there's no break for people listening at home, but for us, I've been on the road now for almost 4 weeks.
A brief intermission into the present.
Yes. We did a performance last night in Stockton. Tomorrow, I am in Spokane. And this is the day off. So how did I do this? We did Cupertino 2 nights ago. Okay. And I took a car service home from Cupertino because it's 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
And then yesterday morning, I spent here in San Francisco. And then I made thing two just got his driver's license.
Ooh, chauffeur mode.
Yes. And he loves driving the car. So I pulled him out of school early yesterday to drive me out to Stockton.
Okay.
And the clever little guy was like, I think we should take the scenic route. And he took me, through the back roads of the Central Valley to get there. It only took like an extra 20 minutes and it was gorgeous.
Where Stockton's like middle central? I don't.
Geographically, I only know it as like way past the 5 interchange off of 580.
But it's not as far as like Fresno or something.
Okay. Not nearly. And it's northern.
Okay, so you didn't go over one. Like I've been driving back and forth to LA a lot lately.
Yeah,
and that 152 by the reservoir and all that is my favorite part of that drive now.
Oh yeah, no, totally. 152 is phenomenal. Yeah, this is totally.
It's depressing because you see the reservoir levels go lower and lower. But then you can also stop by Casa de Fruta. Get some great dried fruits.
I have gotten some dried fruits. they tend to make create some problems a little bit later in the drive occasionally. But delicious dried fruits.
Pistachios. So then thing two drove me home last night after the show, and I woke up again with the dogs, and they're just ecstatic about it. And it's been amazing. We've had this amazing run on this show. Like, the crowds have been incredible everywhere we go. And even when the house isn't fully sold, they're super noisy. And that's been really fun to perform for.
They have to be excited. I mean, this is the Jamie farewell.
It is.
You have, what, like 6 shows left?
Something like that, yeah.
Culminating in San Francisco.
Yeah, we're finishing up here in San Francisco on the 19th. And that show is... To say it's sold out is an understatement. It is packed to the rafters.
Oh, wow.
And it is, I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool. What's some of the cool things you've seen while on the road and outside of the shows? Have you done any exploring?
Yes, tons. Thing One and I found pool halls in 6 states and played pool. He had never been to a pool hall. We started out in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
You know, that's where my parents lived right after they got married.
Well, it's a lovely little town with a very hilariously mangy little pool hall full of some awesome locals. We had a great time there.
I have to imagine it's like kind of all southern pool halls. Can you still smoke in it or no?
Yeah, you can still smoke in it.
Okay, so fluorescent lighting hanging over the ceiling. It's in probably a strip mall.
No.
Oh, no.
No, it's not in a strip mall at all. It's in the middle of town, and it's called Chex, and... I still have to send a picture. They gave me a card to send a picture to. They want one for their wall.
Okay.
And the locals were playing One Pocket, which is a hustler's game. They were playing Bank. They were playing Bank 9-Ball, where every shot has to be a bank shot.
Wow. Oh, that's not okay.
And let's see, what else happened? I spent some time with Jack White and Third Man Records.
As one does.
As one does. They're building an amazing... They opened on Black Friday, and I was there the day after that. So I got to see the amazing facility. It was great.
They're making a record pressing
They're making
plant.
A record pressing plant.
2016, why not?
It's amazing. Then in San Diego, we performed just a block away from the Milk Carton Kids, who... We've been corresponding for a while, those guys and I, trying to work on a project together, and we finally met. And they were playing the Balboa, where we do Woodstock every year.
We've been there.
So hilariously, I had this whole cognitive disconnect. I didn't quite fully realize I was heading over to the Balboa, where I know this place. So I walked in. I just walked into the lobby. And walked down into the auditorium, and someone was like, "Hey, Adam," and I was like, "Hi." And then I realized they were talking in a level of familiarity that wasn't just a fan. And then I looked around, and I was like, "Oh, wait a minute, I know this house. I've just never been in the lobby."
You never go into the front, always through the side door.
It's funny to go someplace, because you guys have done, what, 7 or 8 shows at that,
something like that
theater?
Yeah.
Like, it's weird to go into a place that you're so familiar with in one context. And then go into a completely different context.
Well, it feels like home.
It does feel like home. And then I'm downstairs and I'm like, "What are you doing putting the pizza in that green room? The pizza goes in the other green room." But those guys were really fun. Joey and Ken and their crew, we had a great time. The guy who's opening for them, Julian Lage, also, it was a whole day of sort of mutual admiration society and hanging out and laughing.
That's cool.
Were you able to stay in touch with pop culture, media, news?
Yes, actually, I have been... This is going to be a longer podcast than most, I suspect. I just finished last night the 13 episodes of Jessica Jones.
Incredible.
Holy crap. Holy cow. It's amazing.
So I avoided it because I heard it's about PTSD and violence against... violence, intense violence.
There is intense violence, but... So
there is. It's about that, but it doesn't necessarily... It isn't. Show it.
Also tends to the violence that exists is often quite over the top superhero battles, which takes it way out of the realm of somebody beating a woman, which is absolutely like I can't deal with that shit. That totally throws I need to take a shower after I see stuff like that.
As I've gotten older, it's gotten like it originally was just about women, and now it's just like kind of like when Kingpin smushed the guy's head in the door.
Yeah,
I was just like, I don't think I need. Like, I'm not okay with this. This isn't good for me.
So there is some intense violence in Jessica Jones. It is an amazing show on so many, many levels, and we should probably do an actual spoiler cast at some point. But I want to say,
watch it, Will.
First off, it is the most diverse show you've ever seen. In fact, it's episode 5 before you see a cisgendered relationship.
Wow.
seriously, everything is normalized in this, and none of it's ever commented on, and it's so goddamn refreshing.
Yeah. Who's the production team? I mean, I know obviously it's a Marvel.
It's a Marvel thing. Property. That's why we should do a spoiler cast, because I haven't done any research on the showrunner or anything like that or their philosophy.
The showrunner had been trying to do this project long before Marvel had made the deal with Netflix to do this kind of four series run with Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. So it was reworked to fit into this universe, but you can tell it's not like Daredevil at all. It doesn't need to.
No.
Live in that Daredevil universe. It really stands on its own.
I know nothing about Jessica Jones.
Okay, so just imagine that just imagine that there's a person who has super strength.
Okay.
That's the only thing they have. And then imagine they had a terribly abusive relationship. And I won't spoil the nature of the abusive relationship. It's different than you think. And David Tennant is the scariest Marvel villain yet.
Yeah, it's both his power, but also... just every scene gets you paranoid about who to trust and anything could happen.
And I ended up being sort of long-term stressed about, like, how is she going to defeat this guy? And like, the show is so great because it keeps you interested and involved episode to episode, but you're also like, you know where this is leading. How is that going to... When is the who and you get really like I mean you super involved in the whole arc.
But by no means is perfect. But I think one of the great successes is that it didn't need to be a superhero show.
Right.
But the idea that it is kind of augment that hyper realism of it being a superhero show actually helps make the serious stuff a little more palatable.
Yeah.
The thing that I'm interested in is you said that there's a strong villain. Because, I mean, if you look at the Marvel, the complete run of Marvel, strong villains has not been their high point.
No, complex. I mean,
right. Loki is the best that they've run.
And they ran him in four movies. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is, you're absolutely right.
Actually, Winter Soldier's probably had the best villains. Redford.
Yeah, I agree. Spoilers. I agree. Sorry. But David Tennant's a terrific, complex, you're absolutely right, scary as hell villain. And Kristen Ritter is phenomenal in this show. She plays Jessica in almost an old gumshoe Philip Marlowe kind of the damaged, tarnished hero way. And it's beautiful. And the acting across the board, I thought the young blonde girl, Schlottman, the first one she rescues. I thought her acting is terrific.
She's the one I didn't like that much in the show.
Oh, man. She's a terrific actress. I thought the guy that played Luke Cage was wonderful. Again, we should do a full spoiler cast about this. But okay. Jessica Jones, full marks.
You convinced me.
I also needed a break after every episode. I needed to take a break. Like, it was that intense.
So I have 12 days, basically, to watch all of Jessica Jones. Yeah. And then you're back in town and we'll...
we can do a spoiler cast.
Okay.
What else did I participate in?
Well, you know, speaking of television shows, there was also another television show that made its premiere. And we'd been excited about this. The Expanse.
Yes.
This is on Sci-Fi. And I think the first episode was online, but we were able to watch the first four episodes, and it's really interesting science fiction.
So it's based on a book. On a series of books, the Expanse books, written by a pair of authors that uses a pseudonym, or a pen name,
Right.
When you're writing as a team. It's like, I read the books years ago, or at least the first couple.
Yeah.
And they're really interesting because they mix, well, let's talk about it in a generic... Let's do the thing we do with spoiler cast. We talk about it in a generic way, and then we'll spoil some stuff at the end of the show.
They posit a future with a lot of... How do I say this? They're very sophisticated in the way they plot forward the various natural consequences of various futures of exploring.
Expansion into space.
Only one conceit, which is a thruster system, a mechanism for traveling... making travel between Earth and Mars as far as you could go, not take 8 months.
Well, their conceit is, and he gets into this in the book, but it's hard science fiction, which is what you pointed out.
Yeah.
The conceit is that they have a thruster system that lets them accelerate, speeding up half of the trip and slowing down the other half of the trip.
Right.
I think in the TV show, that's for two reasons. One is so they don't have to do a bunch of expensive zero-G stuff. Two is that it means that it takes 3 months to get from, you know, Earth to Jupiter instead of, you know, 18 months or 2 years.
Right, right, right.
And then from a storytelling perspective, you can extrapolate that. So what does it mean if you have a spaceship where you are accelerating, decelerating for almost equally half the time? Well, then you get artificial gravity that way.
Right.
And then what does it mean if we can colonize Mars and we can, you know, colonize an asteroid and mine an asteroid? What type of cultural implications does that have? And I think that's the super interesting
and the
stuff.
Cultural implications of living in space, of being in space. The bone deterioration is the key part of the world and the plots that they span.
Of the factions.
Yeah,
like the factions are divided not just by their long term goals. Not but you on Earth, factions are divided generally by where we live, right?
Yeah,
you know, the different countries have different feelings about different things, and we have a lot of conflict as a result of those things. Here you have three factions: the Earthers, the old school, which is where the brunt of humanity lives.
Yeah.
The Martians, people who went out to colonize Mars, seems like a pretty substantial period of time ago.
Exactly.
Living in domes.
Yeah.
They've had a little bit of bone loss. They're all really tall. It seems like they speak a little bit of a different dialect than the Earth humans.
Yeah.
And then the outer planets folks, the asteroid miners, and the people who live even further out in Saturn and Jovian systems and stuff like that.
It's an impressive amount of storytelling they get done in four episodes.
Did you think the first episode... So I watched this with my wife. Did you think that... I'd read the books, she hadn't. Did you guys think the first episode was hard to follow or not so much?
I didn't think it was hard to follow.
Okay.
I didn't find it hard to follow. I realized that the first episode setting me up for everything else. And in fact, we're not even close to any kind of resolution by the fourth episode.
No.
I mean,
no.
You're just still spinning out the various tendrils of what's going to end up coming into play.
It really is only at the fourth episode that you get a sense of the scope of the political drama at play and what the cultural relationships are and why those cultures are interesting.
Yeah, and again, in that social commentary, this is the first series since BSG where I feel like really talking about using the science fiction to deeply delve into social commentary.
Well, and I would say the end of the fourth episode is very, for knowing what I know about what's going to happen next,
yeah.
The end of the fourth episode is the same place that the end of that pilot, that two-night miniseries, the four-hour miniseries for BSG.
Yeah.
Like, that. They've just, everything right up to this point has been setting up the world.
Exactly.
You know, you have two main protagonists. You have Holden on one side, you have Miller the detective on Ceres on the other, and then you have a bunch of supporting and B-tier characters who are all pretty interesting.
Yeah, and Thomas Jane as Miller the detective.
Oh, he's so good.
He's terrific.
He also is the thing I like least about the show.
Well,
he's Thomas Jane-ing at a really high level,
He's very mannerist. It is very mannerist, but there's a part of me that, like, they're so committed to it, even giving him almost fedora, a narrow brim fedora, a hat that gets commented on by people in the show is like, that stupid hat.
Yeah, you're a dumbass, dude. he's a bad cop.
Yeah.
Like, it is immediately obvious that he's a bad cop. But, you know, the cliche isn't necessarily, it doesn't ride all the way out.
Right.
So.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I think that, I kept finding each time we bounced into a different faction, I'm like, oh, cool, I get to find out what's happening next in this one. Oh, cool, I get to find out what's happening next in this one.
Which is kind of that Game of Thrones model, when you have so many storylines happening at the same time, you know, you jumping back and forth. And eventually, hopefully, there'll be episodes where you don't need to see, they devote more time, and it's less about bouncing and checking in.
So Game of Thrones has, what, seven families?
Something like that.
Used to have seven families. At this point, This story has essentially two threads, right? From where we are now, we've set up the world. I think we're going to keep checking in with the political lady on Earth.
Right.
We're going to keep checking in with the detective on Ceres. We're going to keep checking in with Holden.
Well, and eventually Tom Miller's case will somehow match up with the other
convergence.
Yeah,
I don't know. Be- Maybe they'll all end up on that ship at the end of the. Yeah, we don't know. Should we get into spoilers? Or we want to talk some more?
I mean,
or do we need to spoil it all?
I guess I don't think we need to spoil that much. People should watch the show to get a sense of, you know, what they like about it. Production value, I think, is great for cable television.
The production value is terrific, and the space stuff. I mean, look, I notice certain things about, and this is common to television, where the animation's just not awesome or not as crisp as it could be. But frankly, that's secondary to the fact that the action is usually really quite clearly laid out. And this is a big deal to me. You know, the best effects in the world don't help if the director loses the audience in space.
You're talking about the Michael Bay situation.
Yeah. And I don't mean space. I mean, like, within the physical space of the film.
Right.
They manage that very, very well in this show. Knowing where you are in the world that you're in.
Yeah, the thing that resonated with me the most, there is a little bit of a monologue in the fourth episode where you really get a sense that, and you imagine, okay, in Star Trek, even though humanity lives on spaceships and stuff like that, it still feels like one humanity. Here, where they're telling a story just 200 years in the future, doesn't seem so far away. Just the fact that there are people, hundreds or thousands of people living, and generations of people living in different places, that's enough time to form an entirely different culture and mindset where they don't feel like they are Earthlings.
Right.
And that's exactly it. I mean, that's the push-pull is the asteroid people, the Martians, and the Earthlings.
And it's believable that, you know, they look the same, you know, with slight differences, but culturally and from what their sense of who they are, identity-wise, is not.
So this is the biggest thing that I think is really exciting about it, is its ambition is really high. And it seems to me right now, on the basis of four episodes, that they are up to the challenge. And that's really exciting to me about television right now in general.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, sci-fi is trying this out, and it's great.
The thing that I liked, the thing that struck me early on, because I read this book years ago, I didn't see social commentary there, right? The thing that TV does is really good at is holding a light up to the problems of the modern day.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're seeing a lot of internal strife in the U.S. right now, even, and a lot of, you know, Islamophobia and other things that we're not going to get into here. But this held up a mirror to that in a way that I wasn't expecting at all. In the same way that BSG ended up being a really good allegory for the early 2000s and the Iraq War and you know, the last war on terrorism.
Yeah, totally. So, totally.
I don't know. I quite like this. I think I'm a bigger fan of the TV show now than I am of the book.
I haven't read the book, so
it's fine to skip. You're good.
Okay.
But they did a really good job. The thing that I love is that they kept a lot of the small details that really helped set the world. For example, the thing Norm pointed out, the asteroid miners are all taller and skinnier. They have a patois, right? They have a different dialect. It's a little hard to follow at first. And then they do a lot of hand gestures and they do a lot of speaking with hands. And it seems like they're actually carrying those hand gestures through. Because, you know, if you live in spacesuits,
right,
you have to use your hands.
Yeah, and I thought that was lovely little additions and details that were really, that round out and deepen the experience.
It reminded me a lot of Seven Eves. If you're projecting X many thousands of years into the future, how does language, culture, communication change and identity?
And by the way, if you go to Amazon and you look at The Martian, it suggests that you read Seven Eves, and I feel like we might be partially responsible.
I mean, hard science fiction is hard science fiction. It's funny because last year, three amazing hard sci-fi books came out: The Martian, Seven Eves, and then Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson.
I haven't read that.
Aurora is a little more like Aurora. Any other year would have been one of the best science fiction books of the year.
Okay, that's the next one I'll read.
It's frustrating. I Cory Doctorow really loved it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm actually going to see Neil in Seattle.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Just briefly to dip back into the tour. On this tour, more than any single other tour, I have been doing stuff, like bunch of stuff, almost every single day. Mm. So we did some tested pieces both in Atlanta and Baltimore about some STEAM programs that I went and talked to the people about. We did a one-day build in Newark with a master craftsman and his team.
Ooh,
yes, very very exciting one-day build. And then my family being out on tour, I'm still kind of glowing from how much activity there's been on this tour. But anyway, back to The Expanse. Do you guys want to talk about any spoilers specifically?
I think Norm's right. I think like, where would you say you guys have both watched the first four episodes?
Yeah.
I feel like if you make it to the end of the second one and you're not into it, probably it's not for you, right?
That's exactly. I wouldn't say base it on the first because there's a lot of storytelling they have to get done. I think you're right. By the end of the second episode, if you're not intrigued, it's probably not for you. But frankly, I was dying to get to more.
The end of the fourth, I can't wait to see. Totally. We have to wait until like the first of the year, basically, for the next episode, I think, at this point.
Well, and it's like the how are we? You're at the end of the fourth episode, I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure this is going to keep going, but where does it go from here?
The world opens up in a wonderful way.
I'm very excited about that. It's what I smell coming, and I'm really psyched.
Cool. Well, I guess that's as good a place as any to wrap it up.
No, we got more.
Oh, we got more
for 20 minutes.
But wait, there's more?
Well, Adam,
I wanted to talk a little bit about the Apple battery pack.
Oh!
Can we just briefly mention the Apple battery pack?
I don't cover tech news anymore. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, let's see. It's got a bump. No one's ever done that before.
Is it the pimple case? Is that what we're talking about?
No. So earlier this week, Apple announced and released a case for the iPhone 6 that includes a battery built in.
Not
the 6 Plus. And it's partially maybe to address the concerns a lot of people have that their iPhone 6s don't have, the new ones, 6s don't last as long. People are obviously using their phones more. It's a crowded market. You can get the Mophie. It's a very popular battery case.
There's many. Yeah.
Yeah. So Apple, they have their own. It's $100. And it has been, it looks weird.
Wow, that is.
And
yeah.
I think the common phrase everyone says, it looks like it's a tumor.
It's like
a weird bulge.
Can we come out on the record as saying that battery cases are dumb?
Well, I don't like them because I keep my phone in my pocket and they make it too thick.
Well, and every time you get a new phone, you have to buy a new case. Well,
And cases, look, the competition is good because those cases are cheap enough that it's not really necessarily a huge killer.
I don't know, man. $100 is a lot for a case.
Well, Apple's is double most other people with comparable cases. But let me just, let's give Apple the benefit of the doubt because they don't do anything by half measures. And internally, I'm quite sure they have fantastic. If I was sitting across from the Apple engineer who ran this program, I'm quite sure he could convince me that this was a great idea.
You convinced someone.
So
I don't.
I know. Let me make this point though. Perhaps what they found when the Apple engineers started playing with all the other battery packs is that the thickness made it harder to get out. So they made it thin on both ends to give you a more sensual iPhone experience. That's entirely possible.
I don't think
possible.
I want a more sensual iPhone experience, Adam.
Look, my sensual iPhone experience is based on taking my iPhone's clothes off at night and fondling it. I take the case off.
The new harder aluminum.
But I mean, it's less capacity than the competitors, more of the price, and it's not as attractive. This is like a trifecta of fail to me.
So it's not like they're not aware of the marketplace. You don't do something different for the sake of doing it different.
Also, a fully charged battery will not bring your phone 80%. From 0 to 100. Yeah. Yeah. It'll bring it to like a shade under 80%.
So okay, here's my recommendation is to go get one of those little like lipstick case size things that cost $13.
Yeah.
That will give you 50%
battery.
Yeah, it plugs in with the USB and it charges. And just chuck that in your bag or in your jacket pocket.
I have like
or whatever.
Five of them. Yeah.
Like, battery cases, they're a sucker buy.
You know, clearly they saw a need. Clearly they believe that they answered it. And, it may be that time will tell that people will start to realize the hidden benefits of this case and we could be dopes here. But on the face of it, it looks like a weird tangent for Apple.
Can we talk about the iPad Pro a little bit?
Yeah.
Because I hadn't seen it until this morning.
I got one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Norm's got one. Pretty sassy.
And the pencil.
Does the pencil, the pencil's smart, right?
Well, before we talk about functionality, I'll talk about how botched the launch it was, just in terms of delivering it, production. Then they released the iPad Pro, which the best feature, I think, is its compatibility with this new accessory, the pencil.
And which the pencil, is, $100?
$100, but wasn't even available for a month after the
and
tablet
now
came out.
It's back ordered for weeks.
Yeah.
So if I want an iPad Pro next year, I should buy a pencil today.
Okay, exactly right. That's precisely right.
But the pencil is one of the best digital styluses ever made.
It's amazing. It's truly amazing. I bought this because of a friend of mine at Pixar told me that the latency on the iPad Pro is incredibly low and that the pencil's functionality was phenomenal. And this is someone who has extensively used all the other products out there and written custom drivers for them. And holy cow, he's right. It is the functionality of it is incredible. I'm really, really loving the drawing. And in Apple's notes, right? So it's their root drawing tools that they've just put in their SDK, I guess.
Built into the OS. Yeah.
Right. Are fantastic. Really, the pencil, when you draw in pencil and then you zoom in and it's got a pencil texture and it really feels like you're drawing.
So that you're talking about the angular ability.
Yeah.
If you're using the actual pencil, quote unquote, tool and you draw at a
you
steeper
tilt
angle,
your pencil,
then you're actually shading. So it actually is smart that way.
And it's not blue. It's not touch. It's not activating.
It's not capacitive touch.
It's not
a different sensor
touch.
That they have
it's
on
Bluetooth.
Yes. So it doesn't work with the older iPads. Now, totally is something I could see coming to the other iPads in the future.
But I mean, when we tested that, those Adobe styluses and things, even the Air was too. The screen was too small to rest your hand on it and draw really comfortably. You can only draw on like a third or maybe a half of the screen.
I think the usability of this accessory is going to inform the design decisions of those different tablets. And they're going to be maybe designed differently so you can use them as note-taking devices.
That's
think
possible.
Of all the notepads you have. The three different sizes. You have a big A1 notepad. You have a small notepad, the Field Notes. Those are kind of the sizes of the iPhone, iPad mini, and the iPads.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. I wish I have a little bit of problem with Apple's with their OS design on the iPad Pro. So the iPad Pro is giant.
Yeah.
It's like a really,
really big iPhone.
And the icons are the size of a really big iPhone. So the icons are like an inch square. Oh, it has
the first iPad problem.
And it won't. You can't scale them. You can't add more icons into the.
They'll fix that in the.
That home screen needs.
The home screen is
completely revamped.
This is the same thing that happened with the first iPad.
Is it really?
Yeah, remember the first iPad? They had the same number of icons on the iPad that they had on the iPhone. So when you opened it up, it looked like a big iPhone.
Yeah, no, this is the joke. The OS is a little bit spotty on that front.
Can you see the drawn notes on your other devices? Do they come across?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what's the other app situation like? Are there other good drawing apps out there yet?
So there's a slew of existing kind of productivity apps.
They're doing updates for them. Yeah,
that support the tilt and stuff.
Pencil.
Oh, so they have to actively support Pencil.
Paper 53.
Penultimate.
Mm-hmm. But they don't tap into Apple Notes, that API level excess of latency.
Is that because Apple's not opening it? Or is
correct.
That's lame.
That code is not
public.
Yeah.
Really?
So if you have a drawing app, you can't use the pencil the way that Apple's applications use the pencil.
And the latency is noticeably slower.
And what applications use the pencil on the iPad right now? Which Apple applications use the pencil? Just notes?
Oh, is it really just notes?
It's a $99.
I think you could draw. I mean, you can draw on the other ones, and you get some of the functionality.
But it works like your finger.
No. You get some of the functionality. You just don't get the perfect low latency.
Yeah, then that sucks.
That's got to be fixed.
Yeah.
We got to fix that.
They just released 9.2 this morning.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, so there may be an update that fixes that right now. We don't know.
It's a beautiful pairing of a device and an accessory. It really is. And it makes me very excited for the future because I would love to use the iPad as my primary drawing source for all sorts of different things.
Yeah, sketching is a new hobby of yours.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, for me, I have to use it because I'm doing VR stuff. I have to have a desktop computer for, like, my work machine is a desktop computer now.
Right,
because
it has to be
have
powerful.
A real video card. Yeah.
Right.
and like, looking at laptops, why would I spend money on a laptop that I can't do my VR stuff on?
Right.
Why not just get a giant iPad?
Yeah.
Have you either used the smart keyboard? Is it out? Have you found one yet?
No. They're way, way, way backordered. Again, this is a weird case where they apparently way under anticipated the demand.
Well, there's a ton of, like, I was in Target the other day and they had iPad Pros, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
But they don't have the keyboards you can't get anywhere and the pencils.
Yep.
I had to pull a favor to find a pencil.
Well, there you have it.
Before we wrap up, I have two recommendations.
Yeah.
One for people out there and one for people in here. People out there, you should watch the trailer for Anomalisa.
Oh my God, it's so exciting.
A stop motion movie coming out. It's a new movie from Charlie Kaufman, who wrote Adaptation, being John Malkovich.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Synecdoche, New York.
He directed Synecdoche, New York. This is a co-directing gig with him and I forget the name of the animator.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't remember either.
But it's through Dan Harmon's production company, Starburns, who does. They also do Rick and Morty, and I guess they funded it partially on Kickstarter.
Yes,
3 years
started
ago.
The funding on Kickstarter.
It was going to be a short film.
It's amazing.
It's a full
What's it called
thing.
Again?
It's called Anomalisa, and
it's very clever.
Yeah,
it'll be coming out before the end of the year, I think.
No, I think December it's early 30th. January. Is it
December 30th for limited release? Release next year?
Guess why.
Because of Oscars.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful in a way that feels totally unique. It is really kind of shocking. I mean, I showed it to my wife and she was like,
what kind of anime? Is it like hand-drawn animation?
No, it's stop motion puppets. Character animation with replacement faces.
Yes. And the eyes like on these puppets
are otherworldly.
They're the opposite of his Zemeckis dead eyes.
Yeah.
They're so emotional.
It's cool. It looks really. When you see the trailer, you're like, go ahead.
And then for the people in this room, I think you should both go watch Creed.
Okay. I heard that
Rocky,
from. Yeah.
What if you've never seen a Rocky movie before?
Then you should watch all the Rocky movies except number 5 and then watch Creed.
So you know that. Did you see the figure now that Sylvester Stallone is currently older than Burgess Meredith was in the original Rocky?
Well, Mark Hamill is as old as Alec Guinness was
right.
in Star Wars.
I also will tell you that I mentioned The Signature of All Things by Elizabeth Gilbert in one of our podcasts. Mm-hmm. I finished it. It's phenomenal.
Oh, good.
It's really, really
Gina's reading
beautiful.
That right now.
I was blown away. I really enjoyed the spit out of it.
We have started watching Star Warses.
Oh!
Because, you know, that's next week for us.
Right, right, right.
I watched the first Star Wars for the first time in probably 10 years the other day. I'd forgotten how intense, like, that opening scene on the blockade runner with Princess Leia, like, how much world building happens with almost no dialogue in that first, like, 15 minutes of that movie.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, right, George Lucas made good movies.
Which version did you watch?
The Harmony Despecialized, of course.
Despecialized 2.5.
Oh, I don't have 2.5. I just have 2.0.
Yeah.
2.5, 1080p?
No, 720.
720.
This past weekend, one of our friends who runs Robo Games, he screened Star Wars for his daughter for the first time. 6-year-old daughter. Rented out a full theater, invited her entire first grade class.
Oh!
And played the Despecialized version.
Wow.
And there were four adults there who had also not seen Star Wars.
Wow.
Amazing. Amazing. I'm very excited. Very excited about the new Star Wars film.
George Lucas seems real apathetic about it, so I think that's a good sign for everybody.
Well,
fans are going to love this.
The biggest spoiler I've heard about the new Star Wars film from my friends is that it's good.
Is that it's good?
Is that it's good?
Okay.
I like scaring the crap out of people like that.
Yeah, I'm super stoked. I'm going on Thursday night.
I have tickets now for Sunday because I'm out of town on Thursday night and I've got a performance on Friday.
I have Friday 4 o'clock at the Japantown. Or
Saturday. Saturday is my final performance of the tour, right?
Well, yeah. Friday at 4, I still have Japantown seats.
Oh.
Yeah, upstairs.
I don't think that's one of my days off.
Okay.
Is that the 17th?
18th.
Oh, no, I'm working.
Your day off is the 17th?
I think I have a day off on the 17th. I think I'm coming back here on the 17th, right? Because I think the 16th is Oregon, is Portland. The 17th, I'm back here.
17th is when it comes out, Adam.
Right, I know, but unless someone wants to give me a ticket.
If we don't get a babysitter, I have a ticket for the 17th.
Okay, maybe I'll go see it as well.
It turns out, let me tell you, who thought getting a babysitter on Star Wars release day? We put in a request 4 months ago.
No way.
And it was easier to get a New Year's Eve babysitter this year than a Star Wars release day babysitter in San Francisco.
Holy cow.
So yeah. If you think they're gonna sell some movie tickets.
Okay.
I mean, they already have.
Yeah.
Have we talked about the field notes?
Oh yeah.
No, they're out.
Yes.
They're beautiful.
Yes.
We almost forgot that.
Will's grabbing field notes right now. So to preface, we did a video with you, Adam, earlier this year, in which you showed some accessories you made for the Inspire 1 quadcopter, including a field notes-like notebook for you to document.
I made my own notebooks, and I stapled them together. I did the graphic design and everything. It was all very crude and rudimentary.
It was cool, but it was in the field notes style.
It was in the field notes style. I actually said that, ripped off from field notes on the cover.
And field notes saw the video, loved it, and worked with us then to make an official flight log, which is now available.
And can I just say what a kind of fantasy camp it was to work with the designers at field notes?
Brian was so good.
Watch them take our ideas and make them so much better and so useful and so tactile. And I mean, it's just, this is like bucket list material. So much fun.
I was so stoked that we got to work with those guys. It was super cool. And they did the sky blue paper, which is one of my favorite colors that they've made so far. So
I really look forward to one of these getting beat to crap in my Inspire case as I continue to use it.
No, people have you registered yet?
What's that?
Have you registered?
No,
you can't. Not yet.
Not yet.
You can't do it yet. People are sending us photos of the maze, which I believe your Shining Maze is in Korea right now.
Yes.
Wow,
and
really?
People are also sending photos of Leatherman holsters.
Right. That they've been making. I saw two Leatherman holsters on the tour that people had made and showed me their versions of.
People are emailing, so please send us more of those photos.
Absolutely.
And if you do pick up the field notes flight log and use it, send us photos
please
as well. And we'd love to see beat up ones.
Yeah.
That's great. That's cool. Super exciting. I want to do more with field notes.
We love those guys.
I'm just saying that outright.
Cool. Well, I guess that's as good a place as any to wrap it up.
I think that's a great place to wrap it up.
37 minutes. That's longer than normal. We fit the bill.
Told you that was what was going
to
happen.
Next week, we return to the past.
Yes.
So, and I think we're in the past through most of the rest of this year, right?
I think so.
Yeah. We accidentally recorded a boatload of podcasts. Who knew? We'll see you guys next week. As always, keep on testing. And if you like the show, like us on YouTube or Facebook or iTunes. Give us a review. Tell your friends. And if we don't talk to you again before the end of the year, have a good holiday.
Have a happy new year and a good holiday.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.